Hello everyone, welcome to the Wellenlänge Surf Podcast. Today we have a very big and controversial topic on our agenda. Wave pools and surf parks. They are definitely very nice to have for every surfer, especially in landlocked countries like Germany, Switzerland or Austria. And also another nice option for surfers even in ocean near countries. But on the other hand, these are projects that have a very big impact to our environment, and no matter what efforts the designers of these projects do or not do, a wave pool or a surf park can probably never call it a sustainable project. Quite a while ago, we already had a talk to an initiative against a large surf park project in Germany that is so far not implemented. Today, we would like to open this topic again, but not just with an initiative from people against surf parks that are not actually into the hobby surfing, but with an institution that is actually developed and established by core surfers, first in America and later also in Europe, the Surf Riders Foundation Europe. Today, we have Vanessa Balsi as a guest. She speaks for the Surf Riders Foundation France and also Europe in this case. They just prevented a surf park project in France that was meant to be built pretty much near the ocean, and they also help other initiatives in the world to prevent projects like this in their area. For Fabi and me, this was a little bit different and quite difficult episode, as Vanessa is completely into this topic and her view on this topic. From the point of view of the Surf Riders Foundation, there is no space at all in the world for any kind of high energy based wave pool or surf park. And Vanessa pretty much leaves no doubt about this in our talk. So prepare for an episode where Fabi and me don't talk too much, but Vanessa, in my eyes, convinces us about the stupidity of projects like surf parks. We pretty much start with a long monologue of her and get into discussion over the time. I would like to encourage every one of you already here in the introduction to let us feedback to this episode. We are going to get back to this and discuss the feedback later on. Now I wish you all a good time and fun in an, in my eyes, very inspiring talk. All arguments of Vanessa are following the same direction. We just need to change our world, change our lives, and change our habits. We have to say goodbye to projects that are not necessary for us, but carry on with the waste and destructive manners that we are used to by today, not just to feel better, but to save the world for our children and the next generations. Here we go. Yay! Moin Fabi and bonjour Vanessa!
Et bonjour!
I don't try it in French, so good morning.
Good morning is just fine for everybody.
Yeah, I think this is going to be my only French word too, and maybe I'll struggle with some name pronunciation later. We'll see.
Yeah, same with me. My German is not better.
In France, always the people always judge me for my pronunciation, so I don't try it.
But you should. It's nice to hear different accents.
Yeah. I agree. It's also like in German like this. Yeah, Vanessa, great that you're here. Thanks for your time.
Well, thank you for the invitation.
Yeah, it's a big topic, surf parks, like in Germany so already with one surf park that we have and a lot of projects that are actually in planning progress.
And one is not only in the planning progress, yeah, it's already in the building progress.
Too, yeah. And so before we start into it, I think I want to make some points of different perspectives that we actually look at this topic, surf parks. So we are the landlocked dudes here in Germany that don't have that many waves. Like we surf the Baltic Sea, the Northern Sea, or Fabi even surfed the Lake of Constance.
The lakes. Lake
of Constance recently, and like a lot of rapid waves. But yeah, for proper ocean waves and groundswell waves, you need to travel a lot. So we have a different point of view to this, I guess, as a French person like you. And the Surf Riders Foundation of France even prevented the surf park in South France recently. So I want to ask you first, Vanessa, what is actually your personal background of surfing and how you grew up with it?
Well, you're going to be very disappointed. I'm no surfer. I've been a volunteer with the Surf Rider Foundation Europe for 10 years now.
Yeah.
And what I understand of surfing is that it's a spiritual connection to the ocean. I swim a lot. I do body surfing, but I don't surf on a board. Mm-hmm. And I go all year round, whatever the climate, whatever, you know, the weather. But I do not surf. But I've been very, very active in the actions against the surf parks with the Surf Rider Foundation. Because for me, surfing, nihi nalu, should be and should stay what it was originally, which is a spiritual connection to the ocean, to this force of life. It's a worship tradition. It's the provider of life, all those remote island communities. It was building community. And that's why it was repressed by the first American colonizers in the beginning. And then came the Duke. You who that is, Duke Hanamoku,
yeah.
who made it popular, who traveled the world and touring the world for swimming competitions, brought surfing to California and Australia. And that's when the Duke became, against his will, a marketing tool in the hands of the thriving tourism industry by the turn of the 20th century. And then surfing turned into a touristic service, a product of appeal with lots of equipment, with lots of merchandise, with a lot of travel involved. And it became a sport eventually. And now it's an Olympic sport. Where champions and egos compete for performance and fame. It is, whatever that is, it is not surfing for me. It's a...
But yes, can I interrupt you? When you say surfing is a sport, no, but... I think the Hawaiians back in the day did it like a competition too. So I think it was in their it's not really a religion, but in their culture, yeah. It was seen like a sport too, I think. But what's the difference to see it today as a sport?
That it's very difficult to argue with that, because we have so very few historical sources to confront that idea. What was first seen and described by James Cook and by all the other European and American explorers in the 18th century and the 19th century is very different from what the Duke made it. He was a swimmer competitor. And so he brought competition into the surfing. But it was very much a community spiritual thing in the very beginning. That's what I see it. And then just to go on with that, and lately, this surfing industry has perverted that into farmed surfer. That's what you are in a concrete pool, in land. This is so disconnected from nature. Whatever it is, it's not surfing for me. It's dorky. It's completely, totally dorky. Get a real life, man. Don't go to a concrete pool. So I understand that well off, because it's expensive, urban, inland people want to ride waves all year round. Whatever the cost, whatever the economic, the social, the ecological, and the political and moral cost. Well, for the economy cost, they can afford the entrance fee. Well, fine with me. No big deal. Their call, not mine. But all the other costs, the social cost, the environmental cost, and the political cost, this is my problem. It's about community building. And it harms me and others. It's not just about you guys taking a wave in a concrete pool. And so for me, the first and foremost cost is the social cost. Surf parks, for me, are making social inequalities worse in this world. Let me explain. Drawing a line between those who can access surf parks and those who can't. That's when the rich cooks are used to buy and privatize waves for the satisfaction of a pleasure or a leisure. What will happen to their social skills when they'll go on the regular lineup on a regular beach? Do you really believe that this will enhance respect and a sense of priority on the lineup? Because surfing is already, I don't know about Germany, but in France, surfing is already making the worst headlines in newspapers in terms of behavior on the beach. Okay.
Yeah, we have it in Germany too. So not on the newspapers, but we have it in social media stuff.
Obviously, because muscle talk and testosterone levels usually. I'm satirizing here. I know that, but that I do it on purpose. Those muscle talk, they often keep at a distance the young, the beginners, the women, the handicapped. It's always the same guys in the lineup, right? And it doesn't enhance our social skills as a community. All right. Let me finish first, please. Then there is the environmental cost, and that's when building those equipment, those huge, gigantic pools inland is a devastating, predatory activity that we don't need, that we actually don't need. It's like skiing in Dubai, right? It's like, imitating nature, trying to imitate nature at a very high cost in terms of land, in terms of water consumption, in terms of energy, in a time when we are asked for sobriety, for reducing all those impact on the planet. We can't afford to let a few surfers, as you said earlier, it's not so many people on the lineup in a slot in the surf parks. It's very, for me, it's unacceptable. It's extremely polluting in terms of construction materials, in terms of energy. And I remind you that in France, most of our electrical energy is of nuclear origin. So it's nuclear waste in the end. Water waste, water pollution with chlorine and microplastics from the equipment that will not be that will be transferred to the natural through the treatment afterwards, and CO2 emissions from the customers traveling to the surf parks, because as you said, you will not reduce traveling, you will just increase traveling, because surfers will want to try the surf park in Switzerland, in Germany, in France, as they do already for the natural spots. And then there's the political, and for me, there's the political cost, because it's all the satisfaction of individual whims and wants is the driving force of our extractivist and productivist civilization right now. And we have reached a tipping point in terms of resource, predation, waste, and pollution. And we as a species, humans, we have a choice now. We're facing a choice, a really big one. Either we change our ways and we adapt to climate change and ecological imbalances, or as egoistic pricks, we do business as usual and we all die faster and kill most of living beings in the process. So it's a global political collective choice we have to make. So all the self-centered, I don't say that all surfers are that, but all the self-centered cooks that will choose to consume the narrative of the man-made perfect waves, soon enough, if we choose that, soon enough, every city in the world will want its own surf park because it's cool. And it will develop and thrive, as we see that happening in Germany, but not only in Germany, all around the world. Most of the 300 projects that are now around the world about developing surf parks are in areas with a lot, a very extreme water poverty and extremely either water stress, underwater stress. So can we afford collectively to prioritize water for leisure purposes, for touristic purposes, in those artificial wave pools? It is nothing less, for me, it is nothing less than a perfect example of stupidity. And stupidity, as it was defined by your German philosopher, Dietrich Bonhoeffer, excuse my pronunciation in German. And when he was making the difference between evil, evil is conscious in inflicting harm on others. Stupidity is blind. It's an abdication of critical thinking. You surrender to the pressure or to conform, to fit in a self-satisfying ideology. And utterly, you're immune to facts. You're immune to reality. You're completely impervious to reason. And in the end, the masses inflict harm to others, but to themselves too. And it's not about a lack of intelligence. This stupidity, this collective group stupidity is a moral failing. It's a moral failing. And we are falling for it as a species. That's very extreme. And I do it on purpose once again to confront the ideas and to question yourself and to surpass the very small satisfaction of a pleasure and confront it to our collective needs, what we need as a society to adapt and to survive in 2025 in Europe and all over the world in the ecological context that is ours today. So for me, it's a choice that we have to do collectively. And that's why I do engage in activism, in environmental activism. And I believe that the Surfrider Foundation, which was created by surfers in the 80s in America, then developed in Europe in the 1990s, I've made the right choice to try to adapt their needs as surfers to the ecological impact of it. And I choose a different destiny. I choose life. I choose life. I choose to resist, and I'm willing to share the planet and the waves on the lineup with whomever is there. And I would like surfing to go back to a little bit more of consciousness when worshipping the ocean, for it's where life first developed and thrived and made our life possible. We all came from the ocean. We breathe because of the ocean. We eat because of the ocean, and we can sustain life with a solid and healthy ocean. And taking care of it is also practicing the ocean through surfing, through visiting it, through swimming. I do swim. That's how I take care of it. And for me, it's a no-go for the development of surf parks as artificial equipment, which are too predatory on the resources that should be prioritized for vital activities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Basically, that's how it's standing in the Surfrider Foundation here in France, but in Europe in general.
Yeah. Thanks for all these information first. I find myself quite in quite a few points that you mentioned. Like I watching the news and think about all the stupidity in the world every day, what we actually do or not do to survive.
Yeah. Well, I'll be happy to discuss the details now.
First of all, I'm not too much surprised that you are not surfing, because I didn't find any content in your social media or stuff, and I know about the Surfriders Foundation chapters in Germany and areas that there are lots of people that get together with not only a surfing background. It's a cool thing about it that it's actually people get together there that with the same subject anyway.
But body surfing is surfing too. I think it's the purest way to surf, because you use your body as a surfboard.
Exactly. I am in direct connection with the water.
Yeah.
I don't need a screen, whatever it is, an equipment. I don't even wear a neoprene combi. I don't do that. Skin and water.
Yeah.
The ocean first.
But picking up one point that you mentioned, one point that actually covers a lot of it. You said surfing in the early days was completely different topic. Of course, I think the Hawaiianic culture did some competition even in the old days, but it was actually a fun sport for every human on these islands. Like it's something special about the Polynesian culture. I think that they did this sport event without anything that's around it. But as you said, it got into the world with a lot of different things that happened, and by now, it's just the thing, you can't turn back time, I think, completely. We are right there where we are, and you won't get the topic of surfing out of the heads in European people anymore. And what I want to ask is, firstly, do you see a difference? I completely get that you are absolutely against wave pools in South France. This is completely stupidity. I think that you need to raise a surf park near the ocean. This is like the worst idea ever, I think. But do you see a difference between a surf park in your area near Bordeaux maybe and in the landlocked Europe? Or not at all?
Alors, for me, it doesn't make any difference. Because as I said earlier, when we invented the first equipment for ski stations, every mountain on the planet wanted a ski resort. And they could do that because we had developed the equipment in the 1950s. That's what happened to all mountains around the world. We deforested and made nice slopes for skiers to go there, right? Mm-hmm. It's going to happen again with that if we don't pay attention to prioritize resources better. Mm-hmm. A surf park in a landlocked, remote place without access to the ocean is too artificial. It's a too heavy cost for everybody to pay for the satisfaction of a few, of a well of few, who will definitely still travel anyway to Bali and California and to Nazaré and wherever you want to go to surf around the planet. So we have to change our culture deeply. It's not a fate. I mean, our society, how it is organized politically, economically, is not fate. I mean, we can change that. It's a social construction. We have to change deeply the way we organize our societies. And we cannot afford collectively to build surf parks in Budapest, in Prague, in Warsaw, in all those places who will want someday to have the Olympic Games held in their city. And because surfing has become an Olympic sport, we'll have to build this kind of equipment. Where do we go from here? What does it say as a species, as a development, as progress, as human progress? Is it going to bring human progress and social equality in the world? I doubt that very, very much. It's going to increase the separating line between those who have the money to do it and those who don't. And we all know that those who don't are the crying majority. It's not right to them. It's not right to the environment it's built on. Here in Bordeaux, where the project is designed, It's going to harm the forest. It's been already cut down. We had century-old oaks and pine trees that were cut down for that on an area that it's supposed to bring oxygen to the city, which is already too mineral, too concrete made. I mean, it's too artificialized. We absolutely, it's too hot in the summer. This Bordeaux is really craving for oxygen and cool temperatures in the summer now. We're going to have an Andalusian, a Spanish climate soon. And without the water, let me remind you that I don't know how it's the situation in Germany, but our drinking water here around Bordeaux, around the Médoc, where you come to visit the shores for surfing, is taken in the very deep, its water surfaces in, it's 500 meters deep. Mm-hmm. We're drinking mammoth pee, basically. It's 20,000 years old. Yeah. We can't afford to wait 20,000 years old for the next glass of water to drink. And we just cannot afford to give 20 million liters of this drinking water for surfers to surf in. It's just not possible.
In Germany, it is a little bit more relaxed. We have more water still, but I just recently heard about a podcast that is about this topic. And like all the different national states in Germany have different ideas what to do with the water, because it gets into this direction too. Like it's still relaxed in Germany, but the question is how long, maybe.
Yeah, we don't have that much water like back in the days anymore, because you see it on all the rivers. The river level is sinking and sinking and sinking. And I think in a few years, we are in the same position in Bordeaux.
We see more and more of these photos and pictures on the social networks, and it should really make us panic, as Greta once said. And we don't, because the water is still running at the tab. And so we rely and we are confident in the system. But the reality of the scientific work that we don't read and we don't listen to is that water scarcity is the next big issue. And we're going to have to prioritize that for vital activities. So please come visit us in France, in Médoc, in Aquitaine, to surf the waves. You're welcome. You're more than welcome. But go on the natural spots. Don't ask for an artificial concrete pool somewhere in a city, in an industrial area near the Autobahn, near the big road, where this surf park is projected to be built 200 meters away from the highway with 10,000 trucks a day. Is that what you dream of as a surfer, surfing around that? Factories in an industrial area and highway? I don't get it. Really, I don't get it.
I'm pretty sure that no one would choose it.
And I understand that you can take as many waves as you want and they're all the same and you can improve, but it's so egoistic against our collective needs. It doesn't worth it. It's not worth it for all of us. Please think of others. Do that empathetic empathy exercise of thinking of others around you and after you. And we need to leave some of the water in ground for the next generations. I mean, Ben, you have children. You want them to drink water in the next decades, right? And it's going to be difficult for us. I don't know if you have ever watched the short film, the Spanish short film called Fin de Temporada, which is a small, and I invite you to have a look at it. It's a small short movie about the closing of aqua parks with slide and slopes, you know, in Spain in the recent years. In the 1980s, they developed like mushrooms everywhere around Spain, up to 170 of them. And most of them now are closed and abandoned because of water poverty and scarcity. So it's coming. It's not a threat. It's already there. It's already there. And we are next in line. So I can promise you that if we build that here in 5 years' time, it will be in the same abandoned and very, very sad contemplation of concrete, you know, rotting in the sun. That's what's going to happen, because we won't have those 20 million liters of water to give them, for them to sell them to well-off surfers. That's how I see it.
We have already the first closed park in Europe, I think. Is the park in Bristol is closing?
The one in Scotland, Snowdonia, closed. The one in Alaya Bay in Switzerland had so many technical problems in the recent years that it had to close for months. The one in Bristol is very fragile in terms of economic model. It doesn't even make money. I mean, the finances fled the Titanic, and they had to close it in the summer this year until they found new stupid guys again to risk money on that non-profitable activity. I mean, unless you do as Kelly Slater does in California and bring in hotels and restaurants and conference rooms and big corporations forums and WSL competitions and TV rights, unless you bring all that money, that connecting money, surfing itself is not as lucrative as it is because it's so expensive to build. The project here is, I mean, if you go to the Wave Garden, the provider of the technology website, you will see that on their own terms, they say that to build a sizable world surf park, you need to risk 30 million euros just to build the equipment. And then you need some more additional 67 million euros a year for the functioning of the equipment. Mm-hmm. So that's why the entrance fee is so expensive. It doesn't bring in money. It costs money. So what is it but a whim? Does it bring economic progress to our society? I'm not sure. I'm really not sure. And when you see the prices in Dubai, which are even more outrageous, you keep wondering for who are we you know, wasting all these resources for?
I have a question, because we talk about building surf parks. In Germany, we don't surf only the surf parks, like the running waves. We also have a lot of the standing waves. And at the moment, there are lots of projects building like it's not a really big project. It's just some flaps, some metal flaps into the running rivers. And so you have a standing wave. What do you think about projects like this? Because I think that's not that much money, and we don't waste really water, because the water is always there in the river, and it's sometimes it's a higher level than the lower level, and sometimes the wave is bigger and smaller, or sometimes it doesn't work. I don't know. But what do you think about projects like this, or like the Eisbach in Munich? There is not really something. No, I think they had to build some rocks into it, or some side planes, and then it worked. So I think that's an easy way to surf.
That's a big difference. Yeah. For the moment, in the Surfrider Foundation, we focus on the dynamic surf parks, where the wave, you know, is going for a long distance. So it's gigantic. Gigantic equipment. It's very different from the static waves surf parks, where the water is looped in a circle and retreated and reused for.
Yeah, well, I don't talk about those ones. I only talk about the ones in the.
But yeah, the dynamic. We focus on dynamic waves, because they're so much more impact. Full on the resources. They're so much bigger. They're gigantic. The project here is two pools, one of 100 meters long and the other of 200 meters long. It's a huge amount of resources to spend to make it work. So we focus on that, because that's the most impactful. Mm-hmm. We don't have a stand or for the static smaller
different sport then again, like it's still surfing, but like surfing on a rapid wave is still a big difference to a running wave. And yeah, but I
if you reduce surfing as standing on a board on water. Okay, it's a surf. It's surfing, but for me, it's not surfing.
So,
I said always, for me, it's not surfing, and since I'm doing it, I say it's surfing. That's the fun thing. You can also body surf static waves, and it's and there are lots of natural ones in the river because of some rapids and some rocks, and so you can. Surf them too with your body, so maybe it's also the connection between skin and water.
I mean, go into a river and, you know, take care of your river and of all the water cycle. If you gain consciousness of what it takes to nature to properly function the way it should, that rivers should, you know, go down to the ocean freely. Freely with waves and with, you know, it's fine with me. I love to do that. In Bordeaux, we have the mascaret, you know, the big waves that come into the rivers, and we can surf that. It's fantastic to experience. And it's better because we practice nature. We're close to nature, to the real element. And as long as you practice it, you know it better. You understand how it works. You feel more connected. It's less stress for you. It's a source of well-being, individually and socially. And in the end, when you love nature that much, you want to take care of it, and you grow that bone in you that makes you want to protect that for yourself and for others and for the next generations. And so we can only invite everybody to connect to nature more, but to nature, to real nature and rivers and waves in rivers and stuff, but not artificial.
I definitely come down on your side in this point. As for me, surfing is completely about nature. My biggest compensation about not going surfing is actually going to the forest and going for a hike and sleeping in the woods and stuff.
Yeah.
And when I get into the ocean with my surfboard or on our Northern Sea or Baltic Sea, then I feel free and I feel settled down. In a surf park, I'm rather stressed that I have to catch the wave. Anyway, if I have the wave, it's fun. And it's, of course, improving my surfing. But one point that I got found...
It's very interesting what you just said. Sorry for interrupting, but it's very interesting for me what you've just said is that... You have a deep, deep connection to nature when you're surfing in the natural waters that you don't have in any artificial equipment.
A natural wave is better than an artificial wave. I think there won't be anyone in this world that is not agreeing to this statement. Anyway, for any artificial or natural rapid wave in a river, for example, you need some special equipment. There are some special boards and leashes available that makes the experience of a rapid wave a lot better. And therefore, I would like to introduce you to our podcast partner, the Rapid Surf Shop, based in Hannover at the Liner Wave. There you get everything you need for your rapid surf or river surf experience. With the discount code SURFPODCAST, you even get 10% off on your order of any supplier there, apart from surfboards. So you can use the code for the right fins, the right leash, for safety equipment and a lot more. On surfboards, it's not wallet, but anyway, another benefit of it, you support us here in the podcast as we get in provision for any purchase there. Thanks to everyone who uses our code that you also find in the show notes. By the way, in the next episode, we take a look on the future of river surfing in Europe. Looking forward to this. Also, I want to say thanks again to Markus by Freaks of Fashion for the title picture of this episode and for all the visual help here in this audio format podcast. Have a look on freaksoffashion.com or Markus' Instagram account. You also find both in the show notes. You find more funny surfing cartoons there and a lot of nice stuff to order. As I just heard, the new calendar for 2026 is online now. I can just warmly recommend this for yourself or even as a present for your surfer friends. So let's carry on with the episode.
Werbung Ende. That's so...
But the fun fact is, I have a fun fact, you surf the in the nature, but you surf man-crafted waves because you're surfing next to the pier, and without the pier, there would be no really sandbar, and without the sandbar, it's not possible to surf it. So you are in the nature, but you're surfing a wave which is on a which is made out of the pier.
Well, it's true, and it can be different because here in the southwest shore of France, we have only sand, and we have sandbars that create all those waves for the 260 kilometers long of our beach, because it's a very long beach.
But there are some piers too.
There are some piers too, but they're very limited because of the nature of the soil, which is only sand. Right. And so, the spot where I go, for example, are the really wild and long beaches where you have those sandbars. So there's no construction. Fortunately, we don't have the touristic infrastructures that we see on the Mediterranean, for example. because of that, the nature of this of the soil that is not making building so easy in our places. That's why you camp a lot.
So,
but it brings other emotions.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, I relate to that.
The most important point in your and all the others information that you shared now is for me that we have to take care that this topic gets not over roaming in the world. Like, we have Surftown Munich already in Germany, and there's going to be the Wave Park in Werne in North Rhine-Westphalia. Not sure if it's called in English like this. Anyway, and there's gonna be another one.
North Rhine-Westphalia. That sounds like a fail.
It hurts my guts to hear about that. It really does. It's far away. I've never been there, but I feel sorry. I feel sorry for ourselves for being so driven by our own little egoistic pleasures. I'm really fighting hard that to bring more collective thought into what we do.
But what I wanted to mention in this case still is, like, we have to definitely have to take care that it's not getting too many of them. Like, even Michi Moore from Surftown Munich said, like, yeah, in Germany we can have maybe 3 wave pools, not more. If it's getting more, then it's not going to work anymore anyway, because, like, the costs are that high and people have to get to this point. And if there's these wave pools all over, then it's it's like with, like you said, with the water parks in Spain is a really good example. And all I can say from our talks to Surftown Munich is that they at least really did their homework compared to other stuff that they have, like the power is completely about photovoltaic and solar power, and like the water is like a lot of effort that they do to use it again and stuff like that. I think it's one of the better projects, definitely.
I have a question. What do you think? Is it greenwashing or not when a surf park like Munich is building a big solar park next to it? Or you think that's good to do that?
Well, it's definitely better than using fossil-fueled powered engines, right? But let's see. Here in France, the project that I'm most familiar with has marketed a green surf park, you know, with we're going to take the water from the rain on the buildings around it, and we're going to keep the rain, and we're going to use solar panels on the rooftops to make the energy, to make it energy autonomy. And they didn't prove it in the building permits, and that's why we took them to the court. And now it's the judge, the administrative judge, that will have to statute on that. We also confronted their communication, their videos, and their social media posts at the advertisement corporation judges who said that it was greenwashing. It is greenwashing. And now in France, we have a law against greenwashing. So we could easily take them to court again to make their communication real, because it costs a lot also to build solar panels, to import them from China, because 90% now are coming from China.
That was exactly my point I wanted to hear. And all the components of a solar panel are also the big problem.
Exactly. Those electrical and technical equipment are going to be very demanding in terms of materials and metals and rare metals that are not here in Europe, that we'll have to extract from far away in for second places in on the planet, mostly by children and vulnerable communities that are deprived from basic human rights and health rights and education rights. So they are forced to work as slaves for us and for our technologies, for this technology that we're using right now, those computers and telephones and stuff. And in encouraging the development of technical solution to the climate problems and to the ecological imbalances, we do encourage social slavery at the global scale. And that is also unacceptable. And for me, that's the first battle to tackle right now. Is that we rich kids Europe and America, we want to surf waves 24/7, all year round, wherever we are, at the cost of others' lives around the world. And for me, it's morally unacceptable.
I think the big thing about this battle is we have all three have a laptop in front of us with a lithium battery.
Exactly. And this is not an individual action. It should be a global citizen action, because we have to change our culture deeply collectively, because individually we are trapped in greed, we are trapped in the tools that we're using to live professionally, socially. We can't live without those tools right now, but we don't need more techno-solutionist equipment like a surf pool. We have to reduce that, and we know that. We are aware of that, and that's why we are integrating into our collective action also remote communities that can't speak for themselves at the international level. We reached out to Hawaii, where they have also surf park projects building on their island, meters away from the natural waves. Exactly, in Oahu.
And they have a standing wave in Hawaii.
The biggest one is projected to be built in Oahu, where the water has been contaminated by the military bases for decades, and they don't have drinking water. They import drinking waters from the continent in Hawaii. Their community, their culture is based on water, and they don't have it. And they're going to, they can't build a surf park there. Come on, guys. Let's be serious for a moment. And it makes me enraged, really, really. Mm. But our fight, our action is directed at the political decision makers and the economic decision makers. But they don't have a conscience. They don't have a fucking collarbone. They don't have it. So we have to build pressure and collective citizen pressure on the politicians, on the decision makers, to make that impossible, to reach that level of stupid, that level of self-harming stupidity as a species. Really, we have to reach that.
This is
for my, I'm too strong hang now.
It is a funny thing about it that I like. I consider this point like exploiting people in other parts of the world, in that many areas of my life, like with clothing, with food, and getting fair trade and stuff. But it sneaks into your life that easily about lots of different. Waste.
We had a early podcast this morning at 9 a.m. So I drank my coffee. So I know that individually I'm the bad girl. I'm the bad girl because coffee too is coming from very far. So in our daily basis, we're not okay with the way we live. But we have to be at least conscious of that and to take action to try to fix it for others too. And that's our responsibility as the rich kids around the table. We it's definitely our responsibility, and it's a collective one. So it's you can go back to me and say, yeah, but you take your car to go to swim in the ocean.
That's what people
exactly
do,
exactly. I do pollute and I do encourage this slavery at the international level, but I'm trying at least to bring some balance on other topics.
This is always what people do when they feel confronted with their own with a topic that they don't want to hear. Then it's always like, but you do this, like, it's like in that many parts of life.
It's a very typical way to reject the attention on somebody else. The surf park promoters will tell you, will always respond to the water consumption and to all the criticism that we express. They always say, well, you know, we have private swimming pools. Yes, okay, it's legal so far until water restrictions come into place and they will be forbidden in time. So you can always, you know, accuse somebody else of doing worse individually. But it's not our point here. Our point here is collective action. We have to change our deeper culture, the way we connect with one another and with our environment.
I see this as a pretty good end of this topic today. I think Fabi and me, we're gonna get into the discussion again in one of the next episodes, probably based on your input here. So thanks there for definitely lots of points that I didn't really consider, before.
Fabi, but please make the question, broader to all your, your followers, because we have to discuss that publicly, debating about it. What do we want? What do we want really for the future?
That's what I just what I just thought. Maybe to our community of listeners, wherever you are now in an English episode, maybe there are even some people abroad. Give us your feedback. What do you think about? Even if you are a highly convinced surf park fan, give us your opinion and we're gonna share it in the next episode maybe and discuss it. And like, good point. Vanessa, I would like to get to one other point. We've talked quite a while already, but anyway, we have time. It's weekend when we talk today. You do a lot more than just fighting against surf parks. You're often an artist. It's all about plastic sculptures and stuff, like the main topic of the Surf Riders Foundation in Europe, I think, the plastic problem. And I just definitely want to give you some frame here to talk about this, to like what your daily work at the Surf Riders Foundation is.
Yeah, so the 10 years ago when I became a volunteer with the Surf Rider Foundation, it was because I recycled myself into an artist. 15 years ago, I'm collecting plastics from from the beach, and I do art pieces with them. And I do what a regular artist would do: exhibitions and workshops in schools and companies and festivals and whatever, where I can meet the people to talk about this issue. And so I was aligned with the philosophy and the ideas of the Surfrider Foundation, who is fighting against plastic pollution in the ocean for years now and for decades now. And so that's my main activity in during the day. So I'm trying to take care of the ocean with my art, and try to raise awareness about, again, what we want to do as a species with our plastic waste. I mean, we use a lot of it, and we pollute the water cycle and the ocean with it, because we don't reuse the material properly. We don't control the fate and the end of cycle of objects around us. And it's, once again, very stupid, I believe, because we can go to the moon and we do heart surgery, and we could do better with our, you know, yogurt plastic boxes. Well, we could do so much better, and we don't. And again, that's a political and social choice. It's not a fate to have to be under these waves of debris and plastic waste on our beaches. It's a social choice not to manage it properly. So we have to change that too. And I'm trying to do it with joy and pop art culture.
Yeah, doing well like this, like a great sculptures and artwork.
Yeah, go on the website and go check out the. I made a nice portrait of the Duke.
Oh yeah,
in a wave, with all microplastics. So I pay my respects to the original, to the very genuine and ultimate waterman there was.
I definitely put this into the show notes, your accounts. One question, I'm not sure if you can actually say anything about it, but do you see a difference between different nationalities, even maybe in France on holiday, in case of plastic? Like in Germany, we consider ourselves quite often as pretty environmental people in this point, like we don't have plastic bags since centuries already anymore, like for free, or like do a lot of these recycling stuff that not really working properly, but at least we don't chuck it right into the nature. Do you see a difference between people? Can you maybe some watch this or?
I must admit that I did my share of traveling abroad. I don't anymore, but I did in the past. I lived in the US, so I know about food into plastic packaging. The thing is, I was very surprised, you know, so I do my hard pieces in during the day, and I do investigate the plastic question, scientifically and politically, in the nighttime. And I was very surprised to see that, yes, you have the image in Germany that you don't use that much plastic, but at the national scale, you do produce a lot more plastics than we do in France, and you do use more plastic on a day-to-day basis and in your industries, which are much stronger than ours, definitely, nationally. And you're a much bigger contributor to waste, plastic waste exportations to third world countries and emerging countries like Turkey. Turkey is crumbling under German plastic waste experts, and French too, to be honest, since China closed its doors to plastic waste imports in 2018, it's becoming a real issue. So it gets dumped, and once again, we're encouraging neo-colonialism with our waste, with our plastic waste, because we send it to far-off countries where we don't see it anymore, where it is mismanaged, and where it ends up in rivers and eventually in the ocean. And then we do accuse them of mismanaging the waste, which is ours in the first place. Come on. So it's just so the system is so cynical. We are the rich countries here. We are organized. We've been organized for a very long time to collect and treat our waste. We have the industrial infrastructures to recycle, to reuse those materials. We do that perfectly or almost perfectly with metals, with glass, with paper. And we fail, lamentably, with plastics because it's so difficult to reuse and to recycle. So the Northern Europe is better at it, definitely, more than we are. We're in France in a deadlock about that. And I once again stress on the collective effort, and I'm not trying to inflict the cause on individuals and the way we consume and the way we live, because part of it is out of our hands. It's out of our decisions. We are trapped in a system where we have to, because we don't, otherwise we wouldn't get food. And we are lucky in France that we have so much markets and farmers markets all over our cities. And we buy raw food and raw vegetables. And that's basically, I have no plastic in my fridge, for example. Yep. But it's not an individual question. It's not because 10,000 people will go zero waste and zero plastics that will find a solution. We have to tackle that question at the collective level too, and change stuff. So we don't want plastic packaged foods anymore. And that's it. Let's go back to farmers markets all around the countries. You'll increase your social skills with talking with farmers directly. That's what I do. It's a pleasure to talk about, what about the cherries this summer? Are they good and they're good? Shall we wait for the kiwis? Yeah, shall we wait for the kiwis? And you try to learn to live at slowly with the seasons and with the changing of seasons. And you don't have to get a pizza of frozen tomatoes in the middle of winter. It's nonsense. It's nonsensical to do that. So try to pace your life back with the rhythm of nature that is providing life. It's a global, but a very deep cultural change. On my personal level, I've been trying to do that for 15 years now. I'm improving slowly, but I know that it will never make any difference. That's why I became an activist.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, I think I thought about doing more in this context too, like with this project on the podcast. We want to push a lot of project like this in the future too.
And the last message, if I may add, the last message that I would like to pass on is that connecting with others into I don't know, whatever you choose, a party, an association, an environmental fight, whatever the collective you choose, whatever the fight you choose, you'll find human warmth in debating and discussing ideas and pushing ideas further. together. And it brought me so much more to reach out to the Surfrider Foundation. We're having those European get-togethers where we confront our ideas and topics and campaigns all together. And that really makes a difference socially to make bond together. It's really something very empowering, and it's fighting all the eco anxiety that you may feel when taking conscience about what's happening to the planet. I mean, it can be overwhelming to have all those negatives, scientific news every day.
Oh yeah.
But reaching out with people and trying to build collective action is bringing joy, is bringing positive emotions, and it's also very important to take care of ourselves as a community.
Good point. Yeah. Basically, I have one last question in this context before we stop here. I think, based on the stuff that we just talked about, Germans consider themselves as environmental, but if you have a deeper look, it's actually not like this. As honest as you can, what reputations the German kooks, we call it in a surf language, have in France in your area? How welcome are we? I mean, it's plenty of us and lots of surf camps. We talked about earlier that I was in a surf camp and you are there in a microcosmos, don't connect with locals at all, actually, and just flood the lineup in the sea. What do you say? What is our image in moment in France?
Well, I can't really talk for the surfers themselves. But what I do invite you to do is come and see us and let's talk together and let's think of a better way to live together and to share what we have, because it's not ours. We're all here for a very short period of time on this planet. Life is so fucking short. Let's make the best out of it for everybody. I would encourage that. I know some people are fed up with German surf camps on the coast, but we need that. We need that. It's so much better than fighting each other. And we have to learn more about each other and talk more so we can fight against the fear of the unknown, of the other. That's so much worse. That's so harmful to our communities. I don't want to get into too much political issues right now, but it's frightening what's happening to the extreme right. Wherever you look, in India, in the US, in Europe, in Turkey, it's in Russia. It's so fucking frightening. Come and join us, and we'll have a big bonfire on the beach and talk about that to make things better. We need that. We really need that. I'm so happy that I could have, we were able to speak this morning together.
Great. Thanks a lot for this. This is always my part in the podcast to bring some political input in there, that we need to focus on the right thing and not again fucking it up totally in the future. And I just listened to a lot of podcasts and historical podcasts about the miracle, about the German-French friendship, actually, that we have today. And so let's focus on this. It's great. Thanks. Fabi, you have any last questions, or should we get Vanessa the last words?
I have a lot of questions, but when I ask them all, we're sitting here tomorrow till tomorrow. So
we can go for a round two at some point if you want.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, that was my point. I think we should do a second episode with you. It's pretty maybe with questions out of our community.
Yes, exactly. I would love to have some feedback from Germany about all those issues. Yeah.
Yeah, it would be pretty cool, and we have a pretty cool community. I think that should be possible, and I'm packed with information, so I have no more questions, but thank you for all the information.
You're welcome. Well, thank you for having me and for letting me expressing the way we see things at the Surfrider Foundation.
Great. Okay, then we see you again maybe soon.
Maybe soon. You're welcome to call me wherever you're in Bordeaux. For some sessions. I'll be happy to come and see you in the waves.
Last time I didn't manage to because we were on a rush, but next time I'm gonna call in. Yeah.
All right, with pleasure.
Yeah, would be an honor. Thank you.
See you soon. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Hey, Angie, look at this wave. Wow, man, I can't wait. Our session begins in half an hour. Come on, Kelly, let's get dressed and jump in there. Wow. Yeah, okay, yeah, let's get dressed later. But anyway, after this talk we just listened to on the way here, I feel a little bit guilty to be here, to be honest. I'm not that convinced about projects like this anymore. Yeah, I know, Kelly. I feel with you, but... Hey, come on. This wave pool is already here now. It's implemented. It is a good project, well designed. Let's enjoy it now. You can't change it anymore. Yeah, okay, you're right. I mean, as long as there won't be heaps of these projects and all over our country and all over the world, I think I can live with this, eh? And this wave, it indeed looks perfect. Look at this, eh? He just did such a great cutback on it. Wow. This is great. Yeah, but I'm gonna do it a lot better in a moment. Let me show you, baby. Anyway, for me it also feels like a little bit like a messy swimming pool atmosphere and stuff. I not enjoy it that much. It can't compete to the sea, which we say. Of course not, Kelly. What do you expect? But it's a proper wave. Nah. I'm curious about the next episode with feedback to it. I definitely gonna write some words about my thoughts, and I hope many other people do. This is definitely a topic to be discussed in the surf scene. What do you think, Slater? Yeah, but come on now, hurry up. I won't miss the first wave. Right.
Free audio post-production by Alphonic.com.